MotoPod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 615. I am Jim McDowell. I will be talking to you about the races from Austria, the Red Bull Ring. And to help me talk about all that great racing action that we had from there is my good friend Joel.
Thanks for having me, Jim.
And no problem, Joel. Derek is enjoying himself in the UK, folks, so that's why Joel has been with me again here for the next episode. Really appreciate him helping out. But before we get into all the other good stuff, I want to have a big MotoPod shout out to some super cool friends of the show, Nick Saban and Keith Kovac. Thank you so much, gentlemen, for your kind donations and subscriptions. Really appreciate that. This is one of the best things about the MotoPod community. It's the people behind the scenes, not the talking heads, that make the show go. People like Nick and Keith, so grateful for you. And if you'd like to help out as well, you can. Just go to MotoPodCast.com. Look for the donate button. A little bit here and there. Everything helps. It doesn't matter. We appreciate everything. So let's get into some news, right, Joel?
Let's do it.
Okay, so the big bombshell of the weekend for news comes from KTM. They came out on Sunday morning.
Yep.
And they said KTM has extended its contract to race in MotoGP until 2026. So we know we're going to have Honda, Ducati, Yamaha, and KTM all the way through 2026. That's great. I like it. Then KTM says, hey, we're not going to provide chassis to Moto2 teams next year. What? wait a minute. You giveth and then you taketh away? That isn't fun. So, but they said that they would maintain a very close relationship with the KTM IO team, as you would expect, considering there's KTM contracted riders on that team. So what do you make of that part of it, Joel?
It's going to be interesting. I mean, just like you said, Jim, it's going to be a period of giveth and taketh away. And it's anybody's guess.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I kind of understand they're going away from Moto2. They weren't having the best of luck this year with that chassis. They built a whole other new chassis for Bender and Martin. So that's obviously a massive undertaking. You're trying to feed four MotoGP bikes of the same level in MotoGP. That's another huge resource, let alone all the people that have to be around there for the Moto3 effort. So, you know what? As much as I like to think that KTM has got oodles and oodles of cash because they have Red Bull on the side of the bikes, they're not Honda. And when if you look at it, even Honda really doesn't have the money to go racing in World Superbike, MotoGP, Moto3. So, a valiant effort by KTM, thank you very much, but just definitely isn't working in the books. But there's still more KTM news. So not only now they got into the Moto3 question, and it's like, hey, well, we're not going to be in Moto3 anymore. And you're going, what? The whole field can't be Honda's. Oh, no, guys, hey, hang on. We're still going to be in Moto3, but we're not going to call it a KTM. We're going to call it a Husqvarna. Marketing. Yeah, gotta love the people there that are marketing. I personally, myself, I've been waiting for this change, honestly, because of the fact that you have this other whole brand, Husqvarna, that basically competes against what you make as far as KTM is. Because if you look at American Supercross, there is a Husqvarna, there's a Rockstar Husqvarna team that races Supercross. There's also the factory KTM team sponsored by Red Bull. So they're competing against each other. But this is also, I think, a really cool marketing strategy, wouldn't you agree, Joel? Because now you get some more publicity. Hey, this is going to be the first rider to win on a Husqvarna. First one to be on pole with a Husqvarna. So KTM is going to use this naming convention, I think, to create the idea that we're going to have all these firsts come next year. You know, first podiums, first wins, first fastest laps, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So the marketing geniuses at KTM have come up now with that. So that's that as far as KTM. I mean, there really couldn't be any bigger news. But we do know also that the Red Bull Ring itself has signed a contract with Dorna, and they are going to host MotoGP until 2025. I find that interesting that that's only to 2025.
How so?
Because in 2026, KTM is still going to be racing MotoGP. So wouldn't you want to race your MotoGP bike at your home track?
You would think so.
I would think so, too. So I'm not sure why it was a 2025 deal on that one, but that is up to whoever. So as we mentioned last show, Sam Lowes is going to be in the MotoGP paddock. He will have a ride for two more years. We don't know where yet, but the Hart rumor this weekend says that he's actually going to go to Mark VDS. And that means he'll be replacing Chavez Verhe and riding alongside Mark Marquez. Now, that is going to be a serious upgrade of equipment for Sam Lowes, and that would be an absolutely fantastic opportunity for him to race at the front, win races, and show the talent that they actually have. So if that holds true, we don't know. We'll have to wait until we get to Silverstone to find that out. But I'm hoping that it's true, because I really think that'd be great. So more silly season news. We've now learned that Dennis Foggia will go to Leopard Honda next year to replace Della Porta, who's going to Moto2, and he will be the teammate to Baldessari. So that's where we know that's where Della Porta is going, at least. And finally, in silly season news, there was the hot rumor from Brno that Jorge Lorenzo was going to leave Honda, go back to Ducati, but he was going to ride on a Pramac Ducati. We've also now learned that the Pramac Ducati ride was, if Lorenzo was going to ride at Pramac, he was going to replace Jack Miller, because Miller's contract is up at the end of this year, and thinking you have the rookie Bezzecchi on the other bike, and he has a contract for next year, then it makes sense. If Jorge Lorenzo was going to go anywhere, he'd have to take Miller's spot.
Sure.
So that was the beginning of the weekend. That was the deal. That was not necessarily that this was true, but this was the rumor. This is what was going to happen. Well, at the end of the weekend, we found out from Alberto Puig that, well, all these rumors about Jorge going back to Ducati are unknown to them, and that was a bombshell to them as well, because they have a contract for 2 years with Jorge, so they expect Jorge to ride next year's alongside of Mark, which sort of kind of makes sense from their standpoint, because we're also hearing the rumor that Mark Marquez's brother Alex is going to stay at the Estrella Galicia Mark VDS team next year, and then Jorge would be gone, and then he could simply slide into the factory HRC team. Mm-hmm. So lots of rumors, lots of moving pieces with this one. This one isn't done. It's got legs. It's going to keep going. But that is where we are with silly season news.
So, Jim, do we buy the rumor, sell the news on this one, or we sell the news and buy the rumor?
I think we sell the news and buy the rumor. I guess I just can't see Lorenzo being there next year at Honda.
I can't either.
So, I mean, good grief. As far as I'm concerned, if Miller doesn't have a ride, HRC should sign Miller for 1 year.
Yeah.
That's how I look at it. I mean, I don't know. But the main reason we're here is to actually talk about racing. So let us talk about qualifying for Moto3. So in Moto3, in the first QP session, three big names kind of jump out in that session to me. That who's in there? Masia, Fanate, and Arenas. Those guys definitely really aren't Q1 material from what we've seen, but it was a bit of a toss-up. It's all about the draft here at the Red Bull Ring. You've got the three long straightaways followed with the three tight turns. If you're not getting a tow, you're not going to be going fast. So hence, these guys obviously couldn't get it right or were in traffic, so they were in the first qualifying session. But as the first qualifying session down, the four people who get out are Masia, Fanati, Minho, and Lopez all get out. Foggia came close. He tried. He missed it at the end. Was not there. So that is how we get into Q2. QP2. So QP2 for Moto3 was an interesting affair. Kennett was not happy with his motorcycle at all in that session. He kept coming back into the pits, and he was motioning to the front end. I don't know what those motions were, because as a motorcycle rider, I've never made those motions, so I'm not sure. Was it brakes? Was it suspension? Chatter? I'm not sure, but he was definitely not happy at all about that. So with 4 minutes to go, everyone's kind of in the pits, but Kennett is out on track. He's sort of pounding in the laps, trying to get somewhere. But on this second run of QP2, if you will, Toba, Suzuki, Fanati, or Arbolino, Fanati and Masi are all throwing down fast times. It's just typical Moto 3 qualifying. Boom, 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 boom. And it's just the scoreboard is changing as he's there. But what was very interesting to me was, as much as what everybody talked about the fact you had to have a slipstream, you had to have a partner, McPhee went out on his own and he put in a time that was fast enough to go to pole. Great lap by McPhee. That was there. But then as soon as he got done with that, the pack came through, and then it was just changing all over the place. When the dust finally settled out from that session, Fanati was on pole. Then you had Sasaki, Masia, McPhee, Ogura, Toba, Suzuki, and Arenas. Canet wound up being in 14th. And as we'll find out later out of that session, everybody got penalized. So we could go through all the penalties to figure out where everybody was on the grid, but I think you need a degree in calculus, an abacus, a scientific calculator, and differential equations to figure out where everybody's supposed to be on the grid. This is absolutely just crazy for that. But basically, when it came down to it for Moto 3, I believe the revised grid, if I have this correct, was McPhee was going to be on pole. Suzuki was going to be second. Fanati was still going to stay on the front row. He just wasn't going to be on pole. Then you had Toba, Arbolino, Vietti, Masia, Sasaki, Ramirez, and Della Porta finishing in 10th. So that is how that shaped up. For me, two interesting things. Della Porta couldn't put a time in. He did not have the ability to get that bike moving. I don't know what it was with that. But he definitely did not have the setup. For whatever reason, he missed it. He was in 10th, but I'm hoping for good things out of him in the race. The other thing was Canet, him starting back in 14th. Where would Canet finally show up in here? 14th, I believe. So that's how it was going to go. Canet worried me, but he's always done this. He doesn't seem to qualify very well. He's becoming a bit of a Valentino Rossi. He tends to race on Sunday, but not qualify on Saturday, which sometimes works for him. But that is how qualifying finished. Anything else you want to add in there for Moto 3, Joel?
No, that's it. Just a dangerous thing for Canet, though.
Yes, yes. So you never want to be back in the pack, especially here with the first two turns being extremely tight, followed by extremely fast straightaways. There is the probability of people outbreaking each other and running off track. Not going to be pretty, no matter how we look at it. So with that, let us move forward and go towards MotoGP Q1. So, MotoGP Q1, we get into it. Benyaya and Crutchlow are in there. You kind of really didn't, like, why is Crutchlow there? You know, that was sort of my question. I couldn't really figure it out. He just obviously did not get a handle with the bike. He was a little bit mad. And as it went through in that first section, he tried. He put in a couple laps that were sloppy at best.
Yeah.
They weren't really there. So basically there was like one lap left for Crutchlow to get himself out of the predicament that he was actually in. He actually did it. You know, you put Crutchlow against the wall, he comes back out swinging, right? That's really pretty much what happens with him. So that was interesting. The other one that was actually, you know, there was Oliveira and Morbidelli. Specifically Oliveira, he's on that KTM chassis. He was so close. He was actually in and was going to go through to the second session until Crutchlow bumped him, because Benyaya had put down a very fast lap, and that bumped Crutchlow down and out, because when Oliveira came by, then he had bumped Crutchlow out. But then, you know, Crutchlow got his act together, put in a vicious lap, and came in second. So Crutchlow and Benyaya will go out of QP1 to QP2. So in QP2, it was interesting. We had the Yamahas on medium compound rears. Very interesting in that respect. Didn't really think or understand or know why the Yamahas decided to actually do that. Apparently they thought with the temperature, because it was extremely hot, it was what, 93 degrees Fahrenheit, which is what, 24, 25 degrees yep. Celsius. Very, very warm. Track temperature is way up there as well, so maybe the soft tire wasn't going to work. But Marquez went out on his first run. He threw it down on that first run. He was at pole. He looked really strong. As always, you know, Marquez is a confident, cool, confident, and collected when he's riding. There's no question about that. He was there. Dovizioso was only sixth. I was surprised about that. I didn't think Dovizioso would be down that far. Thoughts on that one? I mean, he was sixth.
Yeah, I just didn't feel like he was getting 100% out of his bike.
I don't think he was getting 100% out of himself.
Yeah, I just didn't see the sense of urgency.
Yeah, yeah, great word, urgency, because it was almost as if he thought, well, I'm beat now.
Yeah.
There's nothing that I can do, which was weird. Marquez came in, is he going to have the two-bike strategy that he's pioneered, that he's running? No, they didn't. They simply parked the bike, Marquez got off, and I watched them change tires, and I was impressed by the HRC guys and the team. They were so smooth, they were so methodical. The other teams, there's always sort of that guy that throws the stand underneath the bike really, really quick, and he jumps around, and he grabs the gun to gun off the axle nut, and then the other guy's like wiggling and shaking the axle to pull it out, and then they're trying to like wiggle chains off, and it almost looks like Keystone Cops in a way. But the guys at HRC were so smooth. It was just bike on stand, nut off on the axle, just pull that axle out, set it down, all calm, slide chain off, roll tire out, next tire's right there, roll tire on, reverse process. It was pure poetry.
Very calculated.
Very calculated, very poetic, very, very smooth. I mean, maybe there's some endurance racing expertise in that pit that we don't know about, but that's the kind of pit stop that you would expect out of like an endurance team. It's very smooth, it's extremely fast, but it looks so slow because nobody's jumping around or screaming or anything like that, but it was really good. So we get ready for the second run of Q2. Dovizioso goes to second place. Goes to third. So Dovizioso obviously put the racer hat on as opposed to the rider hat, I guess, and comes to third. Vinales, who had looked strong throughout QP4, went to second. He was second quick. Quartararo on the Yamaha was fourth. So, whoa, Yamaha looking really good after sort of a very bad qualifying from Bruno. They're suddenly in the game. All of a sudden, it's like Yamaha is so Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde.
And it's every weekend.
Exactly, it's every weekend. Petrucci wind up crashing. Marquez went through to rip off a 123.027, an amazing lap by him. And then Dovizioso came through, blew into second. Then Ben Yaya went up to fourth as we're narrowing down the time. Quartararo came back through. He was fourth again, but he did make it through with time on the clock to get back around, and he made that lap count. Quartararo threw it into second place on the grid. Absolutely stunning ride by Quartararo to get that Yamaha to go to that place. It was amazing. Really, I think Quartararo really is a one-lap wonder.
Oh, he's incredible.
Yeah, he is. I'm very hopeful that this is the kid that takes it to Marc Marquez, because I think Quartararo is that, because to me, their mental mindset between Marquez and Quartararo are very similar. They always got a smile on their face. They're always jovial. They're always look like they're having the time of their life doing what they're doing, yet they can go out there with just an Assassin's Creed, if you will, and just rip off laps that no one else could even do on those motorcycles. And if you don't believe that Quartararo is fast, look where Valentino Rossi qualified at. Valentino Rossi did not qualify well. He qualified 10th. Is that a surprise?
Not at all.
Rossi is not a qualifier. Rossi's a racer.
That's right.
Always has been. Always will be. But Quartararo he's just got something special, and he just needs to work on maybe some racecraft. He just hasn't ridden a MotoGP bike enough to know the ins and outs of what he needs to go fast on a consistent basis. But qualifying finishes, Marquez is on pole, Quartararo was second, Dovizioso had fell to third, Maverick Vinales fourth. Yamaha looking good here. There's a Yamaha in the front row. There's a Yamaha in the second row. Can't really fault anybody for that. Ben Yaya, Nakagami, Rins, which we expected Rins to be near the bottom of the timesheet. The Suzuki just does not have the legs of the Honda or the Ducati. And to be honest with you, I think Rins' Suzuki is down on power to Yamaha as well.
Yeah, it seemed like it. At least this particular track, it seems like this one didn't show its the full power of that Suzuki.
Well, the power of the Suzuki is all in handling. It isn't in the motor. The boys from Hamamatsu need to go back and try to find a few more ponies for Renz, and then, ooh, it's going to be super tasty if that happens. So with that pole position, Mark Marquez now has 59 Premier Class poles. That is one more than the legend that is Mick Doohan. To say that the record book is in danger of being obliterated by Mark Marquez, I think, is an understatement. That boy is 26, and basically he pretty much can rewrite the entire record book at this rate. If he raced even till he was 35, odds are he's probably going to win, or probably will be the owner of every record in the MotoGP book. So the final qualifying session of the day, as always, is the Moto2 guys. The Moto2, the guys that were in the first one that you kind of didn't really expect them to be there was DG Antonio, Lecuona, and Lowe's. That seems to be the guys that you, like I said, maybe don't expect to actually be in that Q1. But as their Q1 ran out, Lecuona, Marini, Locatelli, and DG Antonio all get through that session, and they will go on to the Q2 session. So in the Q2 session, we had a little bit of surprise. That would be a guy named Chantra, who is the Thai rider. He was looking really strong, just smooth. Just seemed like the bike was just set up. It was handling for him. It was really good. He was turning in fast laps. He was in the top five sort of consistently. It's just a name that you're just not used to seeing there. So that was really pretty amazing. Schroeder crashed, and Binder had took the new frame KTM to the top. Nakashima was there, and he blew through to be on top. Then you had Marquez, who had his first time. It was tossed out because he ran wide. It was a really quick lap by Alex, but he ran afoul of the out-of-bounds limits that are there at the Red Bull Ring. I think everybody at some point has been flirting with or has been penalized for it by some point. For running wide on this track, and it's an interesting track, but stewards of MotoGP, they are very consistent on what is and what is not out of bounds, and the guys have to learn to ride within those limits and respect it. As the time wore down, there was nobody going faster. This is kind of like a repeat of like last year, where all the Moto2 guys went out, and the fast times were set in the very beginning of the session, in that first 10 minutes or so. Now, the same thing happened here. No one could really go any faster. Marquez tried, couldn't do it. Binder tried, couldn't do it. Nakashima really couldn't go any faster either. So the way it wound up was, only person who actually made any movement upwards was Luthi. Luthi was the only guy who actually went up. He actually jumped up to fourth in the end. But as the qualifying ran out, Nakashima stayed on top. Binder was second. Chantra, third. Bastianini, Luthi, Baldassare, Vierge, Navarro, Remy Gardner, Luca Marini, Alex Marquez back in 11th place, and Jorge Martin in 12th. Look at the difference. Brad Binder, new KTM frame, he's number two. Jorge Martin, factory KTM, new chassis, 12th. Brad Binder was riding the wheels off that motorcycle. I don't care what anybody says. You know, yeah, Jorge Martin's a rookie. I get it. Yeah, Bender's been on that bike and has been in Moto2 longer than Jorge Martin, but I still don't care. Brad Binder is riding the wheels off of that motorcycle.
Absolutely.
There is no question about that one. So that ends Moto2 qualifying. So the final qualifying session of the day was the Moto E qualifying, the Super Pole style of it. And Moto Potters, I hate to say this, but man, watching that qualifying session is like watching paint dry to me. I love the idea of these electric bikes and everything that there are. They're cool. They have a cool sound. You can hear tires squealing. You can hear knee sliders grinding, and you can hear chains whizzing. And I think it's a cool, very Star Wars-ish kind of sound that comes out of these bikes. But that single lap was just horrible. And then to make it only worse, guys were messing up on their laps, and they were running out of bounds, so all their laps were being ixnayed, and tossed out. But when it all came down to the end of the finish, quickly, Mike Domeniglio was on top. Simeone was second. Bradley Smith was third. Then you had Raffin, Thule, Garzo, Ferrari, and De Angelis on your top eight. As a note, Giapinau, he was actually 12th. And that is how the Moto E guys finished up. Anything we want to add to that, Mr. Joel?
No, it looks good.
Okay, so we think we got everything there. Sunday, race day, Moto E, 10 o'clock a.m., it's raining. The Sound of Music Mountains have come alive with rain, which was interesting. The Moto E guys, they changed their race from 6 laps to 5 because they were allowed to have 2 sighting laps to assess the conditions with these bikes. They had some rain in their test at Jerez, I believe, long, long ago, and these bikes have changed drastically since then. So it was good for them to get some time on it. And so once they had those couple of laps in, they lined up, they took off on it. What was interesting was Domeniglio was out front. Thule wound off running into the gravel trap. Smith went backwards from the start and went backwards. It was really interesting because with these guys, if you could push the bike at the beginning and break away, nobody was going to catch you. Garzo tried that. He was out front. There was Giapinau was moving up through the field. He was looking pretty good in that race. You know, he is kind of a wet weather specialist. Then Garza went down at turn 3. He just kind of slid into the gravel trap on a low side, lost the front. What scared me about that crash was he instinctively ran over and wanted to pick the bike up. And we have an electric bike with I don't know how many kilojoules of energy, and here come in the background you can see the marshals running, and they've got these big, huge, like radiation gloves on that you see like maybe line workers for electric companies wear, or they're kind of reminiscent of what Dr. Emmett Brown wore in Back to the Future. Yes. And they're running with this to the bike, and all I think it was, don't pick up the bike, or at least look to see if the green light's on that says it's okay to pick up the bike, or whatever it is that they got on them on there, like a big red light that they're, because I think most riders' reaction is going to be to go pick that motorcycle back up. I don't want to see anybody hurt by electric shocks or anything like that. So I hopefully, you know, the last thing somebody tells me if I was on the grid and I'm racing, like, hey, you fall off, be sure there isn't a red light, or tape it to my triple tree or something, so I know not to pick this thing up if it's red, because I'd have the red mist. I just want to pick it up. So that was basically the race. Domeniglio was out front after the Garzo crash, and he ran a great race, won the race. Simeone was second. Bradley Smith rode back up to third. There was some good racing in there. It's come a long way, I think, since the first round. So it's only going to get better, and we will see. So the racing has been good. The qualifying has been bad. We'll just leave it at that. The championship, is Domeniglio, Bradley Smith, Simeone, Thule, and De Angelis, then Ferrari, Giapinau, Garzo, Campia, and Hook. So those are the guys that are in their top 10 there with only 2 rounds and only 1, 2, 3, 4 rounds left to go. Anybody's race, but it has been interesting. I will give it that.
Jim, what do you see that electric Moto E moving to in the long run?
Well, a full world championship, definitely, because right now it's just a World Cup. Yeah. So it's definitely going to go to that. I think whether we all like this or not, as much as we're all petrol heads, electric is the future in some way. Now, the debate is open to how we produce the electricity for these, whether we obtain it through solar, wind, nuclear, coal, take your pick. That's open to debate. It's going to get better. Just like the TT, those bikes are one-off radical pieces of equipment, and they are bullet fast. And for me, I think the refreshing thing right now is that these guys are making leaps and bounds improvements in what they have. We generally don't see that very much anymore, because really you're at such a high level of where the tune is on a MotoGP bike that you're not seeing somebody really take seconds off of a lap time, and you are with these guys. So I find that interesting. I think it's also, I think it's a very interesting engineering challenge, because now we have to deal with a bike that weighs a whole heck of a lot. Battery packs are not light. So the engineering will develop, and these packs will get lighter. They'll contain more power. And then I think the other thing too is the riding style is going to change a lot with these motorcycles. You have a constant linear torque, and you're in the rain. So you're going to have to be very careful with how you wind the throttle on. I realize there's probably software that tames that instantaneous torque, but still, they're a different type of motorcycle to ride. And I think part of the fun is going to be watching these guys learn how to adapt and ride that way.
Absolutely.
So that takes us to Moto 3 in the race. Now, this race was declared a wet race, but everyone started on slicks. There was a dry line, except for maybe a few little damp patches there. There was definitely a dry line. It was one of these things where definitely there was no way anybody was going to use a wet tire. Not unless you believe that rain was coming, but probably wasn't going to be there. As we talked about a little bit from qualifying, there were all kinds of penalties handed out for people who were putting on the racing line, etc. You know, Lopez had to start from pit lane because he pushed his teammate and whatnot from there. So there was 21 penalties that were handed out. It was interesting to see everybody did their siding laps on wets and decided on the grid to go to slicks. So all the teams were busy trying to put slicks on. So that is how we were waiting for the light to go out with everybody on slicks. Fanati got a hole shot from that first row. He was there with Arbolino, McPhee, and Toba. The conditions were definitely different because it was not your normal Moto 3 race, and it was because of the track conditions. If it was damp and it was whoever could figure out how to push and not fall off in the damp conditions was going to go to the front, and you could pull away. And that's the kind of race that we actually had. Delaporta was 5th. Kennett was in 14th in there. Toba, who was on the front row, I believe he fell down to 8th. And after a little bit, the front three, Fanati, Arbolino, McPhee, all had a huge gap over anybody else that was there. Arrhenius, he was there. He got knocked off at the last turn and went down. Fanati got by Arbolino, and then McPhee and Arbolino kind of just started having a ding-dong, sort of a back-and-forth kind of a fight that was going on. It was nice to see Fanati at the front of the race. He was riding a very consistent, very quick set of laps, and he had the conditions figured out. Again, you know, this is a guy who won in Misano in a drenched track. Tricky conditions on a track that was wet. You also had him winning in Japan and Motegi that same year in a monsoon condition. So if anybody was going to be fast, you figured it probably would be Fanati, but Fanati looked fast, even from all the practice sessions, so fair play to Fanati being out front. He was starting to pull a gap there, and that from like lap 9 onwards, Fanati kind of put the hammer down, and he was going forward. There was no doubt about that. That left McPhee and Arrhenius to be swapping back and forth their positions. Kennett was back in 9th. I don't think that's any surprise from where he qualified. This is a Kennett-style race. He was working his way up the list. Delaporta was 5th. It was all good there. But what was interesting that second half of that race was that Vietti and Masia got together in that second group and started hunting down the first group. And they were quick. They were like over half a second faster than the front three guys. But they had the pace.
Well, you know what, Jim? It's a great point. In fact, they worked so good together, they closed that gap fairly quickly.
They did. That is true. As Fanati continued to pull away, you had Masia and Vietti coming to the party. They basically had caught the group that was like Delaporta, Ramirez, and Yuchenko. That was a battle. That was like sort of the second battle that was going on, because you had the front three guys, you had the next guys that were there with those. And then you had, here came Vietti and Masia. And I mean, they didn't waste any time. They just went through them like a hot knife through butter. There was no way around it. They were flying. After that, they basically, Vietti and Masia, broke away from Della Porta, and it was amazing. They just, they hunted down the front, and they got there a little bit late, but I have to give Mossy a credit. He used his brain. He said, okay, Vietti's got pace. I'm hanging with him. He really isn't holding me up any, but I know if I stay with him, we're going to maybe get to the very, very front and have maybe a good shot at a podium, if not a sniff at the very front. So that was what was going down there. We got to the very end. We got to like two laps to go. You had four riders fighting for that second and third position because Vietti and Masi had caught both McPhee and Arbolino. Now, the McPhee-Arbolino battle heated up again here, and that aided Masi and Vietti getting there. But we've soon found out that Masi got a little too exuberant. He stuffed in at turn nine, went way late, hard on the brakes, kind of tucked the front a little bit, which pushed him out wide. He was on the damp portion of the track, a little too aggressive on the throttle, and high side. Over the top, he went and down. So that was a shame. There was only going to be a lap to go because he did this at turn nine. It's only a 10-turn track. I was gutted for Masi at that point. He did all the work. He did everything right to get up the grid, to get to where he was, and then to have that problem.
That was devastating.
Yeah, poor guy. And that was not good. But Fanati wins. This is the track that 3 years ago he quit the VR46 Academy on a Saturday night and didn't race at all. And then we all sort of know the downward spiral of what happened to Fanati. For him to come back and kind of put the Gremlins all behind him and win on that track, I thought was kind of poetic justice. What was really interesting was that fight for second and third. The run to the line.
Beautiful.
Was really awesome. Arbolino, McPhee, and
Vietti.
Vietti, thank you. Lost it there. I keep on wanting to say Vierge, but it's Vietti. They were grouped together, and Arbolino was leading it. Then they came out of 10, and Vietti tucked into the inside without the aid of the draft, heading to the line, trying to squeak past Arbolino. But McPhee, who rode the lap of his life to hang with him, and which was the fastest lap of the race at the very end, got a double draft off of them.
Beautiful.
Timed it perfectly, swung by, beat Vietti for third, and almost by about a half of a tire, missed out on beating Arbolino to the line. Fabulous race.
Incredible.
I mean, this was not your typical Moto 2 race. You're used to that pack racing. You're used to everybody going kind of crazy around there. But the last couple of laps made up for that because it was a fabulous race there at the end, especially for them to get there. I thought it was great racing.
Oh, no, no question about it. In fact, just like you said it too, McPhee came through fastest lap on the last lap. How timely.
If you're going to do it on the last one. I mean, there's no question about that. So as we go back, a couple of things I want to mention about that. Jan Onchu, the Turkish rider, had a miserable day. He had miserable qualifying. Couldn't get out of Q1. Had a miserable day. Again, wet, damp conditions. I thought he would go better than he did. He didn't. He wound up getting into a crash where he misjudged his braking, tapped the back of another rider. I can't remember who it was. But he went spiraling into the gravel trap. Two crashes on the day. Not a good deal for him. Congratulations to his brother, Denitz. He actually scored a point in this race. So
wonderful.
That was actually good for him. Mm-hmm. And I think that wraps up everything that I want to say about Moto 3 for the race. Okay, so quickly, Fanati, Arbolino, McPhee, Vietti, Ramirez, Della Porta, Yurchenko, Cornfield, Antonelli. Oh, Canet was 10th. That's the other thing we should mention. Canet did not have a great race. He was 14th at the start, never got going, and basically finished there. But he got lucky that Della Porta wasn't doing any better for whatever reasons, because with Della Porta 6th and Canet 10th, That takes the championship down to... Takes the championship to... Delaporta leading the championship on 155 points with Aaron Canet second on 154. So Delaporta maintains that one-point lead for the championship. This championship battle will go down to Valencia.
Nail-biter.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. And to add that little extra bit of intrigue, it's a Honda versus a KTM, which is even better. Because next year it'll be a Honda versus a Husqvarna. So, there. But it is a two-man race for this title. Nobody else is even there. If Arbolino could have won and grabbed some points there, he would be a little bit better off. But I think it's definitely up to those two. I don't think anybody else is going to go there. So if you're making the nameplate for the trophy, you either need to pencil in Delaporta and slash Canet for right now, because that's where that's going to go. All good with Moto 3. Let's do Moto 2 race, right? So Joel, Moto 2, talk me through it. Tell me something I don't know.
Well, Jim, I got to tell you, one thing that was I thought it was exciting was to see their first ever pull for Tatsuna Nagasami, 27-year-old. So, and then I think also just seeing start with Alex Marquez back in 11. Where is that going to be? Where's their race going to head from that perspective? So I think to start with, real exciting thing. I think 25-lap race, declare dry race, and just a wonderful starting row. Great setup for a great race.
Bender gets the hole shot on the KTM. Luthi is side by side with him because Luthi got a great hole shot too. He was right there with him. But Luthi went wide in the first turn, and that allowed Nakashima to go through. So it was Bender, Nakashima, Marquez, and Gardner. They had a bit of contact in going up over that second turn. They kind of bumped into each other a little bit, and Marquez almost went down. He got clipped. So that's lucky move number one for Marquez, because I think this race is all about the luck of Marquez, to be honest with everybody. So Navarro did his typical thing. It's a full fuel load on a speed up, which means he's buried in the pack. So I think he was like 11th at the end of the first lap. So it was Bender, Vierge, Nakashima, Luthi, Baldassare, then Chantra, the tie rider, Marquez and Martin and Marino all there in the beginning. It was definitely a great ride by Bender because he started to pull away. He was putting the distance on everybody, and there's no question about that. But Vierge, he takes down Nakashima at the turn four. He just got in there and just wiped him out. It was one of those things. It was a racing incident, and the stewards are going to look at it. I got to believe that Vierge is going to be starting a few rows down next race.
Oh, absolutely. And you know what, Jim? This also allowed Bastianini and Gardner to step in to 4 and 5. Very, very much a beneficiary of that whole situation, which moved Marquez out.
To the Vierge point, at the end there, Vierge did go over to Nakashima. He did apologize for it. I think that's a great move. I love when the guys do that because it's true sportsmanship. The thing that I didn't like about it was he was walking down the pit lane with his PR handler, and they went to the garage together. I'm like, dude, don't take the PR guy with you. Just go down yourself, be a man, and be like, hey, I'm sorry. Shake hands, say you didn't mean it. I got in there a little too hot, a little too deep for the conditions, etc. Why does the PR guy got to be there? Because I think it's not between the teams, it's between the two guys riding the motorcycles. So that's just me. Where were we in all of this? So, we got down to like 18 laps to go. Marquez, he kind of had caught the leading pack because Marquez started to put a rhythm together.
He did.
Admittedly, he had that bump with Gardner at the beginning. Gardner then was like at the front. He's sitting there running with Bender and the boys back and forth. And basically, you know, Bender and Gardner, they had a bit of a gap to third. Luthi was running wide everywhere. Luthi had an incredibly sloppy race, I thought. And that's not Luthi. Luthi's a very calculated, very calm, very precise kind of a rider. Every time in a turn four, he would run wide. I don't know if it was a setup problem or where he was at mentally, maybe. But Luffy's kind of going the wrong way, and Marquez is kind of going the right way. But meanwhile, everybody else is gone out front. Like, Luffy lost pace from the 12, with 12 to go, he had lost pace. Navarro had pace. We expected out of the speed up. And Navarro, you burn off half the tank of gas, and he's going to be there. But it was Bender, Gardner, Bastianini, Marquez. Gardner then tries a pass on Bender at turn one. Bender goes wide because he ran it in there deep. And so he's got to come back onto the track. Well, the rest of the pack is coming. And his old buddy Marquez is on the exact piece of pavement that Gardner wants to get to. Gardner bashes into the side of Marquez's bike. And Gardner falls off. Marquez's fault? Yes or no?
No. And I'll tell you, as much as I'd like to point the finger at something else, somebody else on this one, because Gardner was running a great race, I got to say it was a racing incident as opposed to a racer incident.
Yeah, that's the first thing. Where was Marquez supposed to go? Because as a rule, as a racer, you ran wide. It is your responsibility to figure out how to get back into the traffic safely.
Yep, that's right.
I think Gardner had a bit of red mist.
Yep.
I think he just lost it for a second, and he was like, I am going to get as much drive as I can, and I'm going to get right back on Bender's backside. And lo and behold, Marquez is there. So this is like lucky incident number two for Marquez, right? The scary part of this, the scary part for me, is Gardner is down, and he's sliding down the hill. Because as you come through turn one, you go over the crest, and you go to turn two. Bender's on his backside. He's sitting up. He's facing towards turn two. And he's got his hands up like, what happened here?
On the track.
And he's on the track. And everybody is, I'm thinking it, but the guys of the commentary team are yelling it. Get off the track. Get off the track. Because you were in that is a very precarious position. Now, I get it. If you're hurt, you're broke, you're whatever. Okay, I understand that. But it was obvious by Gardner's body language that Remy was not hurt. Seriously. He may have some bruises and stuff like that, but he was not seriously injured from that crash. However, Jorge Martin flashes by. And I mean, from the first camera angle, I gotta believe Martin missed him by a foot, maybe two.
Close.
That scared the crap out of me. I mean, that made me want to wet myself right there, because all I had was flashbacks of really bad things I've seen in dirt track, where, you know, somebody's in a pack you can't see and somebody runs over somebody, and then those are just absolutely hideously vicious accidents that no one really ever wants to be around. Luckily, after Martin went by, I think reality sort of snapped Gardner back into shape, and Gardner decided to get off the track, which was a good thing to do. So that's that crash. We had like six to go at that point when that crash happened.
Which was interesting, too, because what the top five then became Bender, Bastianini, Luca Marini, Mark Marquez, and Jorge Navarro.
Yes.
So, beneficiary again, or Alex Marquez.
So, with five to go, Marini, who had pace, because Marini came from behind, he was really the only guy that actually went forward. Well, him and Marquez went forward, but at this point in the race, Marini had pace. He was flying. He was hooked up. He was looking good. Marini had a shot at winning this, really, in all honesty. He really, really did. With five to go, Marini goes for second on Bastianini. He loses the front, and then he takes Bastianini out. And this was at the turn 9, 10, like heading into 9. And so they go down. And they both tumble off into the gravel trap. So now it's Bender, Marquez, and Navarro. So lucky break three for Alex Marquez. This boy needs a lottery ticket, or I want him to go to Vegas with me, because the luck this boy had this round, absolutely amazing. I was, or am still, a little worried about Bastianini, because he was on a stretcher, getting carried off on a stretcher. He was definitely in the gravel, he was holding his ankle or lower leg. hopefully it's nothing serious and this just hurts, as opposed to getting maybe a crack. I hate to see a cracked ankle or anything, but, you know, 2 weeks to go before Silverstone, he could probably wind up doing pretty well with it. But we get down to the very end of it, and it's Binder who will win the race. Marquez will be second. Navarro will be third. That was all the way from 15th. A classic.
Impressive.
Jorge Navarro ride. Luthi will finish sixth on there. So that was really pretty much it. I thought it was great to see Binder actually win the race because Binder deserved it. It was his birthday. He had the new chassis. He was riding impeccably. I think he rode great the whole weekend. So I was really, really happy to see Binder win one. I would really have hated for him to go all season and not actually win a race. That would have been absolutely horrific for that. Really, the one cool thing that I saw was, did you watch when Marquez rode into the Parc Fermé? Mark van der Straaten was there with his iPhone out, and he's taking pictures and video. He's been there like 150 times, but to him, it's still the coolest thing in the world that they're on that, they're on the podium, that they're in Parc Fermé, and he's so happy about it. He's gonna take pictures and snaps on his phone, and I'm telling you, that's the kind of guy I would love to be around at a racing team, because apparently all he wants to do is go race because he's enjoying every minute of it. And that was kind of, you know, it was that raw, personalized emotion because I go to the racetrack, I take videos, I take pictures because I'm excited to be there. And he's the same way. And I loved that. And it just really was one of those touching things to me that kind of makes it that we all love motorcycle racing because we all love the racing. And we are all just big petrol heads at heart.
Oh, that's incredible.
It was just, it was like, you know, there's this weird kind of kinship you feel as a result of that. So
true love for the sport humanizes it.
Yes.
Like a kid in a candy store.
Kid in a candy store, man, having a great time. So with Binder's win and Marquez finishing second with Navarro third, the championship point standings becomes, and Luthi six, the championship point standings become thus. Alex Marquez still leads the championship. He now leads by 43 points over Thomas Luthi. Navarro has now got to 128 points, which puts him 55 behind Alex Marquez, but that's only 8 points behind Luthi. I hate to tell Luthi, but he better look over his shoulder because Navarro is coming for him for second place in this championship. I think it's, you know, it's not quite a 2-race lead in points for Alex, but I think it's safe to say that we can at least inscribe Alex on the championship trophy.
I would agree.
Anything else, Joel, from that Moto 2 that we didn't touch, that we need to touch?
No, I think
talk about.
No,
we're good.
I think we covered
nothing
everything.
Nothing that you want to add to that at all?
I think we're good to go.
Okay, onto what I think was probably the best race of the entire weekend, the Moto GP race. I think we all knew this was going to come down to a Dovizioso-Marc Marquez battle.
Yep.
It just kind of been that way, but it was a different flavor of battle this time. It was definitely cat and mouse. People were being coy. But we're getting a little ahead of ourselves here. Start of the race is interesting because now it's much, much cooler today than it was yesterday. So there becomes an issue of which tire do you use? And Marc Marquez was being interviewed by Simon Crafar on the grid, and Mark was very candid that he noticed that Dovizioso had gone to the soft. He was on the medium. He said, "I'm not sure which one I want. We don't know which the soft tire will last, if it will give the proper amount of grip, but I'm contemplating going to the soft." Marquez didn't. He stayed with a medium rear. Basically, Quartararo went with a soft rear. Pretty much everybody kind of went to that soft rear, but not him. So when the lights go out, Marquez gets a hole shot, and of course, Dovizioso gets the hole shot right with him. And they both go into that first corner they go through the first corner, and Miller goes in that first corner really, really super deep. But he comes out of there in third. So Miller made up a lot of ground by charging up the inside on that first turn. Ballsy move by Miller.
Huge.
I think we've seen Miller do that all the time, and he's just that good at it. So we go into the third turn. Dovizioso and Marquez are side by side, and neither of these two boneheads want to give an inch. Not at all. Marquez is actually on the inside of Dovizioso, so he kind of has the line. They break ultra late, and both of them go wide.
Incredible.
It's like, you're sitting there going, Yeah, this is turn three of a 23-lap race. And 28-lap race.
The cat and mouse begin.
Going to be fantastic. Quartararo kind of comes out in the lead then from that little fiasco. And we finally see Marquez get roughed up because essentially him and Dovizioso were so far wide that Quartararo goes to the lead. Rins is second. Miller's third. Then you get Dovi and Marquez. It was going to be interesting because this is the first time we've seen Marquez that far down in the list. But back at turn three, Paul Espargaro had a bit of a really crazy incident. His bike just like turned off. Tito Rabat just misses him, but Kyle Crutchlow isn't anticipating them stopping or changing lines like they did. So Crutchlow winds up falling off. He had a really good comment to Simon Crafar during the race. He says, "Well, I got what I deserved for having a bad start." I'll leave it to Cal and his English gruffness just to basically tell it like it is. So back up front, Dovizioso and Marquez go past Quartararo, and sort of things are right back to how we want that to be. The lack of top speed in the Yamaha was telling. The helicopter shots, Marquez and Dovizioso were putting, what, 3-4 bike lengths on the Yamaha?
Immediately. Yeah. Incredible.
But it all the helicopter shot also showed us something really cool. The fact that the Honda has got the legs to run with the Ducati.
Yep.
They are pretty much equal on top speed, and they're pretty close to being equal on acceleration. Dovizioso might have just a little bit of acceleration on the Honda, but it is not much.
Yeah, no question. From year to year, you can see a huge difference. No question about it.
I'm licking my chops because Marquez has got enough power to stay with Dovizioso. I'm like, ooh, this is gonna be good, right? Unfortunately, Miller falls off at turn nine. I think he wanted to really show that Jorge Lorenzo has no place at Pramac and that ride is his. Unfortunately, it didn't work out that way. Again, this is the whole silly season thing with Miller and Lorenzo. We'll figure that out. But, you know, you could see the huge disappointment in Miller because I think he wanted to make a statement this race, and he didn't get the opportunity to make that statement, which, happens, but it's where it was. Now, Dovizioso and Marc Marquez have gotten past Quartararo, and basically Marquez kind of gets through on Dovi at 10, but then Dovi kind of goes back and forth, back in front. It is a ding-dong couple of laps there between Marquez and Dovizioso. And then we get into this part of the race where it gets really quiet. Marquez puts a move on Dovizioso and is out front. And you kind of think that this is kind of how Mark is going to pull the pin, run these laps out really, really hard. But Dovizioso doesn't really let him get anywhere. But the race settles into being extremely processional at this point. And you're just thinking, or I'm thinking at that point, I don't know about you, but I'm thinking, okay, Marquez has got this covered. He's got tire. He's got everything. Dovizioso's got nothing. And he's just going to eke out this win. He's going to just put a tenth or so on him because in the two left-handers, Marquez was putting at least a bike length to a bike length and a half on Dovizioso.
Yeah, that's right.
So, I mean, you know, at this point, that's my thought process. I'm in that vein. Mm-hmm. This is where we're going. It's going to be eked out. It's all going to be good. But then we get down, and we have nine to go. Dovi then gets past Marquez at turn one. Okay, all right. But then Marquez gets Dovi at seven in a wicked pass. Only Marc Marquez could probably make that work in that left-hander, but he did and went right on through to Dovizioso. But Dovi goes back at him at turn nine. But he's wide. So the same thing happens and repeats itself at turn one. They both go in there together. Dovi goes wide. Marquez cuts back across. And at that point, this is becoming epic. It is two guys that are now well out in front. Quartararo is way back. Nowhere to be found, at least from the camera shots. But this is now turning out to be an epic battle between Marquez and Dovizioso. At this point, definitely Marquez has pulled the pin. He's putting everything he has into it. The front end is dancing on him. He's running as hard as he can. They have it to where we get down to like one to go. And Marquez kind of comes out of 10. He's got Dovizioso right with him. And Dovey's got some drive on this one. And so Mark just kind of runs over and he squeezes Dovey over to the pit wall. That was hard. It was fair. And it was really good racing because Marquez, you know, people are going to be all over the place that, oh, Marquez was riding dangerous and here he doesn't have any respect for anybody. Yeah, he does. Because he left Vicioso at least three bikes between him and the wall. At least. He did not go all the way there. He knew he was there. He knew he was beaten. He let it be. But he was going to make Dovizioso work for it, which is how it should be.
No, I agree with you 100%. I think it was fair, but he gave him enough space to still race and be safe.
All that you need to do in that one. So Dovizioso has now out front, but then Marquez goes by because Dovey goes wide at one, right? So Marquez is now back out front, and you're thinking, okay, that was Dovey's last great shot. Dovey's got nothing left because we know the Ducati doesn't really turn, because you can see Marquez out-turning Dovizioso, and Dovizioso used up any tire, or if he's used up any of that other stuff, he's not going to be able to do anything about it. As the lap dwindles down, I'm thinking, Marquez is so good to the two left-handers, he's going to put two bike lengths on Dovey, and we're going to cruise this one home, and this is going to be the absolute death blow. You know, it's a cage match death blow, and now it's like the knockout punch that's going to take Marquez to the championship, and we're going to have demoralized Dovey instead of Desmo Dovey.
That's right.
Right?
And now the epic ending.
Was I ever wrong? Somehow, the Vicioso goes whipping through the two lefts. He is now exactly on Marquez's tail. And I'm like, oh my God, he's going to just go into turn 9, outbreak Marquez, and that's where it's going to be. But he doesn't. He was just that little bit short. And I'm like, okay, Marquez has got this. And then, I have no idea where this came from Dovey, but I loved it. Oh, I loved it so much. Dovey just stuffs it up the inside of Marquez at 10, block passes him, and goes on to win the race over Marquez. I mean, that pass was so un-Dovey.
No question about it. No question about it. Seeing him get that inside position, get that good drive out of 10, and just using that Ducati power to get to the end line. Boom.
Done. And it was, I mean, it was such a wild move that Dovizioso, when being interviewed in Parc Fermé, he says, something I thought I got to do something crazy, so it worked. He even admitted that, because Simon Kripper asked him, how'd you get through turn 10? I don't know. I mean, it was like, I love that. It was so Dovey in that whole, you know, the very thinking, very calculated Dovizioso just goes, I don't know. It was actually brilliant. I loved it. I loved it so much. And, you know, I was so happy for Dovizioso. I honestly was. It was, and not only was I happy for him, Tardozzi was going crazy in the pit box. He was jumping on people, hugging on people. He was having a fight with a fire extinguisher in the pit.
I thought he was going to tear an ACL. He was hopping around.
Oh yeah, I could see him having a stretcher going to Clinica Mobile. I could see that, man. It was a great MotoGP race. This is one of the ones that you sit in the back corner, and when you want to bring your friends in and tell them, hey, this is why I watch MotoGP, you pull out maybe Stoner on Rossi at Valencia, you pull out sort of this race from here, maybe the one from 2017 with Dovizioso and Marquez. I mean, these are the ones you put out there and you go, this is why I watch racing. This is why I do it. It's that good of a race. In fact, I will make you a bet that this race will be free on the video, on the website for MotoGP, because it's actually that good. You know, the Assen race from 2 years ago was free for a long time on the website. So it's all there. The other thing I really loved was, you know, at the, you know, Dobie gets off, he kind of celebrates with his crew, he goes over to Marquez, they shake hands, they kind of hug, they embrace, both of them just have this huge smile on their face, and what was really cool is Marquez had that smile, but he had that little glint in his eye, like, okay, you played me, that's fine, and he even admitted such in the interview. Marquez admitted that, you know, Dobie had kind of played him, he had a better tire choice, we finished second, it was our fault, which, you know, is great. You know, you can't be perfect every time, but you do your best that you can, given the circumstance you can. And if Marquez was really struggling with the grip like he said that he was, that kind of explains how Dobie was with him through the two laps, through 6 and 7. I get that. You know, we all don't make mistakes, but as far as making mistakes go, Marquez has made one mistake this year, and that was Texas. Here in America, he fell off. If you take that out, Marquez has finished first or second in every race.
It's incredible.
The consistency is absolutely mind-numbing.
Well, and I think the other part, too, is I was really impressed with Mark walking over to Ducati's team after the race ended and high-fiving them. I thought that was really class.
It is. I mean, again, for all the haters out there who don't think Mark Marquez does not respect everybody out there, he does. It's just sometimes he's a racer first, and you know there is a human in there somewhere. Yeah. He's not a robot. I think you saw that today, and I thought that was a good change for that too. So, other things in the race that are there. Valentino Rossi comes. So it finishes off as Dovizioso, Marquez, Quartararo. Valentino Rossi, your man Joel, comes in. Fourth place.
Yeah, what incredible! The whole weekend it seemed like it was quiet, but you look at even the top five. Like you said, you got Quartararo coming in third, Rossi fourth, Vinales fifth.
Good day for Yamaha.
Great day for Yamaha. Rins sixth. But it really was all about Desmo Dossi and Mark Marquez.
Mm-hmm. You know, honorable mention to Miguel Oliveira. He is first KTM home. First top 10. For the team, for the Tech 3 team, really, because he rides for Tech 3. He is maybe coming to grips with that bike. It was the best he's ridden, so he definitely deserved it. At one point, he had a pace as fast as the guys out front. You know, might have been only for a few laps, but there's definitely some progress being made at KTM, and they're finding out that in racing, you can take seconds off, but when you guys start finding tenths of a second, it's a whole lot harder than what you thought it was. So it's going to be that much more difficult to do. And they're finding that's a problem. You know what? And maybe that's part of their decision to get out of Moto 2. Is there any value for them to build a frame for a Triumph motor? Probably not. Is there value in taking the guys that were doing the work on that frame and putting them on the Moto GP team? Sure, because then they can work on that frame. So, you know, it's a business decision, but it's also maybe the right business decision for KTM. You know, it is a lot of money to go racing. And yeah, they got a lot of money from Red Bull, but they got to do what's right for them. And I think that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to be the best at what they're trying to do. And, you know, I think that they're fine winning Moto 3 titles, and they might be fine with Moto 2 wins here and there. But the prize is a Moto GP win.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's going to take the whole company moving towards that for them to get there, I think. It is a Herculean effort that's going to be required to do it, and they're realizing that now. So,
well, and if you look at KTM, then you kind of just slide over to Yamaha. You got arguably Quartararo riding the best of the three. Yeah, I had Rossi and Vinales. So,
I can't deny that.
So you start looking at this is far-fetched. Where does Quartararo fall on Yamaha's list?
He should be high. I mean, the rumor was that Petronas Sprinter Racing has ponied up the money and said, we have the money for a full factory bike next year for Quartararo. Can you give us a full factory motorcycle? So the onus now is on Yamaha to produce four factory motorcycles. No hand-me-downs to the Sprinta team at all. And why not? If they've got the money,
do it.
And want to, do it. And if you're Lynn Jarvis, you're an idiot if you don't give Quattroro a full-fledged 2020 motorcycle with every update along the way as they go. Because, honestly, Quattroro is the next man. I've seen enough of Quattroro. I thought Quattroro's first couple of poles and front rows and the one podium were just going to be offs. That wasn't the norm.
Yeah.
That Quattroro was not going to be able to sustain what he had in there. But he did. And he has. And he is, in my mind, the next coming. There's a lot of guys that are coming in this next wave of people. And you look at Moto 2, you know Alex Marquez is going to go to MotoGP, maybe not in 2020, but he's probably going to go there in 2021.
Yeah.
We know Binder's going in 2020, but he's going on a KTM. Okay. You have those guys right there are the class of the field of Moto 2, without question. I think Remy Gardner, that was heartbreak for him this weekend, but I think Gardner's the next one coming too, because I think Gardner on the bigger bike rides better. So I think if he was on a MotoGP bike, he'd be like Quattroro. He would just suddenly be fast, and we would just be like, whoa, how'd that happen? Kind of a thing. But, there's a lot of up-and-coming talent. If you take those four people and you put, say, hey, they're going to be, within 2 years, they're going to be running against Mark Marquez, man, we could be in for some absolutely epic battles because the other wild card in this is Alex Rins. If, he was on a track where he just did not have the horsepower to run at the front, but he is fast, no question.
Absolutely.
He's a talented man on a motorcycle, and if Hamamatsu gets him a little more horsepower, gets him a little bit faster motorcycle, he's going to be there on these bigger tracks. And it's going to be... I kind of think that we're getting to where there's going to be some absolutely just epic three-rider, four-rider battles that are just going to be the norm here shortly.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like we're just on that cusp. I mean, we're going to have to deal with a Mark Marquez domination for the rest of this year, but I just don't think it's going to be that way next year. I know that's early, it's big, it's speculative, but I feel it.
Well, and we haven't talked about Maverick.
No, and he looked good. And he tried a shortened chassis for this weekend, so they must have kind of maybe moved the wheel up in the swing arm. Maybe they put some offsets in the front end and kind of turned to make that bike a little shorter, maybe to turn a little quicker. Didn't necessarily work for him, but he still finished. He finished fifth, and he wasn't that far behind Valentino. I mean, he was pretty much a second behind, which is nothing to be sneezing about.
No, not at all.
I mean, let's be real. At this track, Marquez and Dovizioso were on another zip code. They were outside. They were on another postal area. They were the creme de la creme of the championship.
Absolutely.
And we've had a couple races that were kind of boring with Marquez, but we do not have a problem now. This race was far from it. But that is how it is. Did we do the points yet for the MotoGP? I don't think we did.
No, we didn't.
Well, it's no surprise. Mark Marquez is out front. He's on 230 points, which gives him a 158-point lead over Andrea Dovizioso. Danilo Petrucci, which we never even talked about Petrucci, but Petrucci wound up finishing. Petrucci crashed. Yeah, I did talk about him. Petrucci crashed. But he's still third. And then you got Rins in fourth, Rossi, Vinales, Quattroro, Miller, Crutchlow, and Nakagami counts at your top 10. So that is MotoGP from the Red Bull Ring in Austria. Joel, I thank you for sitting in because Derek is enjoying himself with the @DaveNeil. They're taking in some BSB over in the UK. Derek, I hope you're having a great time. Dave, thanks for showing Derek a great time. And that's about it for us here because we got 2 weeks until Silverstone, and we'll be back then. And Derek will be back from vacation. So Derek and I will probably be together. We'll talk about Silverstone. We'll probably chat about what he saw over in the UK. I think they're going to Cadwell Park. So watching the superbikes go over the mountain there will be pretty cool. So we'll get Derek's opinion on that. Joel, anything else?
No, thanks for having me. It's been fun.
I appreciate your help for getting this all done. And we will talk to you guys in 2 weeks.